we can exploit some of this concept, and in some regards we already do. If you think about, back to this theoretical model, if you think about a population being somewhere right up in here, you know, there are a couple ways we can manage that. First of all, we can try to totally eliminate every individual in that population, complete eradication, which anybody who does pest management knows it's very hard to kill every individual. Another idea is to sort of knock it down, knock it below the Ali threshold so that extinction occurs just because of an Ali effect. And in many respects, this has been shown for gypsy moths. Sandy did a very nice analysis. This is on the West Coast. I always forget if it's Oregon or Washington State, but Washington. I always get those two states mixed up. I'm not sure why. My apologies to anybody from those two states. I guess for those of us on the East Coast, we sort of say, West Coast. It's all one region. What he showed that, you know, by just killing about 80% of them, that you could eradicate the remaining ones would go extinct on their own. And also Stephanie Whitmire worked as a postdoc with me, showed that in many areas of the U.S. you could get low density colonies that in most areas would just go away on their own without any kind of management intervention. So that's one way. The other way would be to try to manipulate the Ali threshold itself, basically strengthen that effect so that it makes it more difficult for a population, even if it's above the Ali threshold number one. By manipulating that, you might see some sort of eradication as well. And in many respects, we already do that as well. Mating disruption is a perfect example, or could be used as an example of how we're manipulating the Ali threshold. We do this all the time in many different species. We're not killing anything with the pheromone, but we know it works. We don't quite know why it works, but we know it works in low-density populations. That it does sort of makes it harder for the males to find females, and the populations can be eradicated. Concurrent to this session, there's a whole session on messing around with host plant volatiles. Certainly that would be another angle where we might be able to manipulate the Ali threshold as well. I think that's the balance of my time. I'd like to thank my collaborators and, of course, my wonderful technician, Laura. Thanks.
Let me tell you how this story started. In 1991, September, Professor Niemelä came from Finland to spend a year in the United States on sabbatical leave, and he came to Michigan State University. And one of his goals was to kind of work on plant defense theory and publish some papers that he had backlogged. So after a couple of weeks, I volunteered to take him on a tour of the Great Lakes area so he could see what the forests are like and get some sense of what's happening. And we were heading actually to a meeting in northern Wisconsin, so North Central Forest Pest Workshop. We left, here's Professor Niemelä a few years ago. We left East Lansing and we were driving north, and Peck saw all these dead elms in the farm woodlots. And he said, is that Dutch elm disease? I said, yeah. It's still playing itself out, although most of the elms have died in Michigan. A little later on, we stopped at some pine plantations. We looked at European pine shoot moth damage, and we also saw European pine sawfly damage. We went a little further, and there were some big white pines with thin tops, and I said, that's introduced pine sawfly. We stopped near the Mackinac Bridge and we looked at some birches, and there were two species of birch leaf miner in the birches, both introduced species. And we crossed the Mackinac Bridge and we started to head west toward Wisconsin, and we made a stop and he said, I don't believe what I've seen. He said, you have all these European insects in America, obviously causing damage. And he said, but I don't know of any American insects doing similar damage in Europe. And I said, I don't know if I can believe that, Peck. I said, certainly we've given you as many as Europe has given us. And he said, no, you're wrong. He says, and so he started to think about this, and we finally ended up at our site. And by the time we got to northern Wisconsin, he was already proposing theories to explain this great disparity in insect abundance. So I argued with him at the meeting that night, and he said, when I get back to Michigan State, I'm going to gather some evidence, and then I want to give a seminar. And so about 3 months later, I don't know if any of the students here, any of the faculty were there, but he gave a seminar then, and it must have been February or March, about this very story, about this great disparity in insect movement between North America and Europe. And at the time, in fact, we published this paper in Bioscience in 1996, so the idea germinated in 91, and then we let it kind of smolder a little bit, and then I went over to Finland in the summer of 95, and we finished writing this paper. But anyway, so it all started almost serendipity, just taking a visiting guest on a tour of the Great Lakes. And so here was the balance of trade in 1996 when we published that paper. Europe to North America, we estimated that there were 300 species that are living on